Welcome to this edition of Creator Talks. I'm your host, Christopher Calloway. On this episode, I have two returning guests, Ram V and Dave, working on Paradiso. The first volume is complete. The trade paperback is coming out soon on May 16th of the first four issues. And being published through Image Comics, that first trade is just $9.99. Insane crazy prices. So if you haven't read this series, now's your chance to catch up at a bargain price. If you fell off and want to get caught up, or if you're a trade waiter, now is your chance to jump on board and get caught up on the series, because the next arc begins in July. Ram and Dave and I talk about the series, where it's been, where it's going, and other projects that Ram V is working on. Some yet to be announced, but he does tease us about what he's working on. Something new for Ram. Plus, I have a chance to ask them additional questions about themselves. Yes, we did talk in our last conversation, episode number 82, about what each does for rest and relaxation, their island book and beverage of choice, but I've added more questions, so we find out. What was on their bedroom walls growing up? What pictures and posters? What birthday stands out in their memory? If they were an action figure, what would be their accessory? And what is the one question that an interviewer has never asked them before that they do want to be asked about? And Dave has a few things to say about that question. So we had a lot of fun, and I think you will too. So let's join the conversation with Ram V, Dave, and me, talking Paradiso and more, here now on Creator Talks. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks, Chris.
It's been, what, since November, was it? Sometime back? Like 5 months ago, just when Paradiso was starting out.
Yeah. It was November, I think. Yeah. It's all gone by in a blur. So.
It has, hasn't it? Yeah. So tell me, since November, since we last talked, non-comic related, what's been happening lately with both of you? Ram, you first.
I've been working, mostly. Around this time last year, I think I pitched a whole bunch of things to publishers. They all got picked up. So I've been working mostly, but you said non-comics related. So I'm going to move away from that. So I've gotten a new puppy, which is great. And I'm also picking up my guitar again. So I might start playing with a little bit of seriousness.
Now, when did you start playing? When was the first time? And how long has it been since you put it down?
I don't know. I've been playing since I was a teenager, really. Probably about 15, 16 years now. I think I put it down when I moved here. I was just so busy. And I have a old sort of 1975 Fender American Highway Strat sweet guitar, which is lying in its really nice cover unused. So I should really do something about it.
So you found the time now. Things are starting to settle down now that you're moved and you've got those projects greenlit. You can kind of have a little more time just to relax and get back to the strings.
I'm very consciously trying to make some time because, I mean, writing is such a sort of output-oriented thing. So you're constantly putting out ideas and thoughts. And if you sort of ignore the fact that you need to put some ideas and thoughts in, you end up kind of burning out. So I'm very consciously trying not to let that happen.
And I understand. I have to schedule time to do other things outside of like the podcast. Cause I'm like, well, I'm going to do one a week. That's it. You know, of course, that being said, there's two this week, there's two next week. So what, you know, these things happen. But for the most part, you know, it's, the kids are like, Daddy, I recognize you. And my wife's like, oh, nice you to join us. So yeah, it's a little more balanced now. And you have the new puppy. How's the new doggy doing? Well-trained?
Just getting there. When you get a puppy, you always kind of ignore the fact that for the first year, it's just ridiculously, you're constantly cleaning up after him and you're throwing away furniture that's been chewed to nothing. So he's just getting past that point now. He's still a little bit chewy, but he's getting over it.
Yeah, we've had our dog now for, I guess like 2-3 years. And so she's past puppy phase, but every once in a while, she'll leave a gift for me. And I don't know if it's just out of spite, too excited. I think she just gets too excited. Like, oh my gosh, I can't wait.
It could even be like an attention thing, so.
But she's a small dog, so that makes it easy to clean up. Like, she's right. About the size of a cat, so it's not like a big deal. It's like, oh, well, you know.
Yeah, so is this guy. He's a Jack Russell, so.
Oh, okay. Dev, how about you? What's been cooking?
Mostly been focusing on work, but since the last time we called, I've come back to my place where I usually work mostly. Like, I'm in Bangalore now. Last time we talked, I was in Kolkata, back at my parents' place. Right now I'm back here, and I'm actually planning to move soon to a place of my own. Right now I'm in a shared apartment sort of situation. So I'm planning to move to a place of my own where I can like sort of have like a more personalized space of my own, you know, a studio and like my own place to be basically. So I'm looking into that. But other than that, it's mostly been work, as Ram can attest to.
I understand.
Where are my pages?
They're all the way around. Please, no. Please wait.
Well, we're going to talk about the book, but before we do, there was one thing I was going to bring this up to Ram. I was going to say, Ram, do you like classic cars? And I'm a little slow, see, and I saw you posted something, and I was like, oh, cool, he likes classic cars, too. And you posted or retweeted a 1969 Ford Mustang GT, which, you know, gorgeous car. Love that. But I realize now it had Ram Air. So I guess maybe that's why you did it. I don't know. Are you an enthusiast? Or was it just the Ram Air?
Yeah, I like looking at beautiful things, well-illustrated things. So I might have retweeted something. Was it like an illustration of a car and not an actual photograph?
I think it was an actual photograph. Maybe, Dev, it was you. I can't remember now, but I thought you did Ram, but
I don't remember either. Like, I might have just
randomly hit the retweet
button. Yeah,
you may have.
I have a Pinterest collection sort of thing where I collect like pictures of muscle cars mostly. If there's a like occasional sports car thrown in there as well, if I like the looks of it. But mostly muscle cars I really like.
It was an actual car, not a picture, because it said it's restored to a very high standard with the original invoice. The engine number was matching the body. It was the correct engine. So yeah, it's a super expensive car now. I mean, it's probably one of those auction house cars. You know, you wouldn't just go and buy that off of somebody. You'd probably have to go to, I don't know, one of those big auction houses and pay like $100,000 or something for it.
Like, this is so weird that I don't remember this at all. It's like, for one day, I am not me, and I'm this dude who loves, I mean, I love cars, but I'm this dude who loves like really into classic cars.
It has really not come up often. Like, I haven't seen Ram geek out about, like, he loves cars, like, loves all things good, but he's never going to be like, oh, Dave, I saw this awesome car today, and I've never seen him do that. So it's strange for me as well.
It's probably me. I'm probably got things messed up. My information's bad. But hey, you know, it might still be out there if you're interested. So there's a classic car.
I'm gonna go through my feed.
Take a look. Maybe. It was pretty sweet. It was pretty nice looking. I've been to a few car shows just to check them out. You know, I like to look at things I can't have. You know, it's like one of those things, well, I guess I could get it, but I'd have to give up my current car and another car and then like drive it every day. That was what my wife said. I said, I saw this really nice 70 Mustang at a car show. It was sweet. She's like, okay, fine. Sell yours and you drive that car every day. I'm like, all right, I can't. It just seems wrong to do something like that.
I wouldn't even touch it. Like, oh, my precious.
I would be terrified.
I mean, also, Dave's in India. I'd be surprised if he could get out of second gear when he's driving something like that.
That's right. Oh, yeah, that's frustrating.
I don't even drive. I don't drive.
Why bother?
Yeah, I'll probably get myself killed anyway if I drive. That's why I'm...
Well, let's talk about Paradiso. The first four issues wrapped up, and you have the trade coming out May 16th.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
You must be. The last issue, number four, was bigger. It was bigger than the other three issues. Not in size, total page count, I mean.
I would know.
You felt every page.
Dave's like, I felt every page of that.
Yeah. Now, that's interesting that you made it a little bigger than the standard issue versus making it a five-issue series, which I appreciate because you clearly didn't decide, well, I'll just pad this out and make it five issues. And maybe Deb protested, like, no, that's enough. Why did you guys decide to do that? Like, why did you go with a little larger for the last issue?
If you look at the trade, it still has the content of a five-issue trade. It just made more sense to me on two fronts. The first being that I don't like feeling like I just read a comic book in 10 minutes and put it aside. And I was like, oh, well, that's done. So I work with a certain level of density in the pages, but I also like to decompress certain moments. So if I feel like I need to take a few more pages to do that, I would like the ability to do so. And part of working with Image is great. They let you do that. They don't have like a page count that I need to stick to. That was quite useful. And so I said, all right, my issues are always going to be slightly longer. And, you know, a couple of other projects that I'm doing right now as well, I'm working almost to like a 26 or 28 count issue.
Yeah, almost all our issues are over the 22-page mark, I think.
Yeah, that was part of the reason. The second reason I did that was purely from a pragmatic point of view, in that you expect that people will start waiting for the trade after they pick up like the first issue or the second issue or so. And so it just made more sense to me to go, okay, can I come out with a trade relatively quicker than 5 or 6 issues? And so if that meant I wrote larger issues but fewer issues, that seemed to work out better for me.
Yeah, that's the thing. Your books, I'm like, a new Paradiso. I'm going to put this aside and read this because I can't just blow through this book. The artwork is very dense. The story is very dense. And I like the way you did do that, where you paced it such that some pages go by quickly if there's big action scenes, but then you'll slow down and get more into the characters, into the story. And we learn more about Jack by the end of the first arc. There's still a lot to be revealed, though. But you do slowly build it. But it's not like, I'm going to read this and then, you know, 5 minutes and then go to work. You know, you got to make some time.
Definitely can't do that with parody. So you can't really look at it for, like, read it in 10 minutes and be done with it. Give you, like, questions in your mind. You'll be like, wait, why did that person do this? Or where did this come from? Like, you'll be wondering, why is this happening? And you have to go back to it. And it gives you things to think about. That's what it does mostly.
I was looking at a discussion about Paradiso on a forum, which I will not name because I don't want people to know I'm trolling them. But I was looking at a discussion on a forum, and you know, someone said, "Oh yeah, I really enjoyed this," and then came back like 2 days later and posted, going, "Ah man, I went through a second read and I enjoyed it even more." And to me, that was like, that meant that I had been successful, that there was something you could take away from the story on maybe a second or a third reading, because I feel like all good stories are like that. Sometimes, you know, there are very few novels that I will reread, but every time I reread New York Trilogy, for instance, or every time I reread Tolkien, there's always something new, always something different that I look at and go, okay, I see what he's doing there. So to be able to do that in comics is very encouraging.
Oh, that's great, because I hear the opposite about certain things like movies. People will say, I saw this movie, it could be a Marvel movie, or read a comic, and it was great. And then when I looked at it the second time, it wasn't so great. But it's great that with your book, they like it even more the second time. And it does take a couple of reads to try to absorb everything, and you're going to be thinking about it.
I mean, I believe that all art should be either evocative or provocative in some way. And so hopefully it provokes questions or evokes some sort of sentiment for people who read it. Yeah, I don't know why that happens with movies. I tend to not particularly enjoy movies that you look at for the first time and you go, oh, well, that was entertaining. But then you choose to ignore all the stuff that was kind of annoying about it. And then you go back and look at it a second time. It's happened to me in the past. Like Blade Runner 2049 was beautiful to look at and brilliant to watch the first time I saw it. And it was just gorgeous movie making, and all of those things are still true, but then you put all that aside and look at the story and you go, you could have worked a little harder at doing something cool here. You didn't have to. It felt like they worked with what they had and didn't really reach for anything beyond it.
Yeah, I kind of had the same feeling about the Blade Runner movie. I don't want to collectively like just diss it, but yeah, it had the same feeling. It looked really awesome, but after I watched it, I was like, the parody show, that's something we've always had in mind. Me and Ram, we just sit down and talk about the script. And we are constantly trying to be like, okay, so this, how do we show this in a meaningful manner? And that's something we always talk about. He's always like, okay, no, don't do this, because this is going to be way over the top and way too flashy. We wanted to have this emotion. We wanted to have this sort of vibe to it. And I'm like, okay, that makes sense. And then we move forward. We are always trying to put more weight behind the punch, as you would say, whenever it comes to parody. So every scene we analyze and break down before we move forward. So I think that helps with making parody so good a second time when you read it. That makes it a better read.
So now the first trade will come out, and then you're going to start volume two. Now, about volume two, before we get into what we may see, if someone misses the trade of the first volume, would they be able to jump into the second arc? We'd rather they not. I mean, you're going to get way more out of it if you read the first trade. But we know some people might just miss out on that, and some people don't hear about it. That's why we're trying to boost the signal. Would people be able to pick it up in the second volume?
I mean, I think people would be able to pick up the book, but it's definitely something that has so much density and so much that has already happened, at least conceptually in arc one, that you'd probably have a tough time following everything.
Yeah.
If you picked up the first issue of arc two. But that said, we're doing like a story so far, a recap page at the beginning of the issue. So at least all the stuff that's absolutely essential for you to know to read on from issue five will be there on that page in any case. The second thing that we're doing, though, is that each arc is meant to be a little self-contained. So, yes, obviously, there's this bigger story that's going on. But we kind of resolved the story of Arbok and these guardians in arc one. And so we'll be looking at another story and resolve it to at least its immediate plot points, if you will.
Yeah, we are trying to keep it, I'm not going to mince words, it is going to be hard for someone if they don't pick up the first volume and get into the second volume directly. It's more like they'll still enjoy it because it has nice visuals and nice storytelling, really engaging storytelling. They're still going to enjoy it, but it'll be hard to follow. So I would suggest picking up the first volume, support the creators. But like Ram said, we are trying to make it all self-contained. Like me or Ram, like I'm the artist, so I have access to content that other people don't have. But Ram has told me like future storylines, and I'm really excited for them. But the main thing about them is they're all self-contained. They have all their own aesthetic, and they have all their own storyline that begins and concludes in that arc. So that way, I think it's still going to be an enjoyable read.
I mean, the best way I would talk about it is kind of reference something Kieran Gillen says, that every kind of unit in comic can be looked at as a self-contained thing, right? So the first unit of a comic is a page. And so every page kind of can be looked at as a unit of storytelling. And you go on and do a scene, and that can be looked at as a unit. Then you go on and do an issue, that can be looked at as a unit, then an arc. So I kind of look at things that way, and I'd like to feel my arcs. I'd like to at least make my arcs feel like they're contained units. There might be things that might go across arcs, but there'll be a fair amount of story that's kind of tied up, if you see what I mean.
Well, a couple of things about that, and most people who read comics, especially Image Comics, know this. The first trade's always, almost always, $9.99. So it's a great price for what you have. Basically, is like almost five issues of content. It's four issues, but you've got all the pages there of a five-issue series. So you got that going for it, right? And the recap pages, they never replace not reading the first arc, but I'm glad when creators do put in a recap page because it really does help somebody that is curious about getting on board.
Yeah.
And while you talked about that, it made me think about, and I was trying to search for what it was, the Legion television series. I really like that show. And each show is just fascinating, just beautifully shot, great story. But if you didn't see season one and you just jumped in, you would completely not understand what was happening with certain things. You know, you have to start at the beginning. Still great. I would liken it to something like that because of the density of the story and the characters in your book. You know, you're missing out. You'll enjoy it more if you have that knowledge from the first arc.
The other thing that I really like doing is I kind of like having callbacks to things that have happened, which might have seemed like they were insignificant at one point in time. And then second trade in, you're looking at something, and if you've read the first trade, you will go, oh, wait, that happened in the first trade. And wow, that I did not realize that's what it was going to do. So I like doing stuff like that with story. Really, that experience is only possible if people have read the first trade.
Now, in the second arc, what can you share with us? What can we get excited about seeing?
Okay, well, I've been using this to pitch the second arc. and so if you thought first arc was kind of Mad Max meets Westworld, then second arc is going to be Tron meets space vampires. That always gets people going, what? 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 How is that even possible?
How are the two even related?
But we make it work, don't we, Dave?
I think that's actually the best part of working on Parity Cell. Exactly what Ram said just now. The first arc is like a Mad Maxian sort of adventure with robots and whatnot. And the second arc is Tron and Space Vampires. In a thousand years, you wouldn't think of... You could have those two concepts in one property. You could never imagine having those two concepts in one single IP.
It kind of builds into the idea that a city is different things for different people, right?
So that's what I think Parity Cell does so well. Because when Ram told me about this the first time, I was like, okay, I'm going to reserve judgment. But then he told me about it. And he told me all about it. And I was like, yeah, okay, this makes sense. Let's do it. That's why I'm so excited on working on Parity Cell.
With this second arc, do you plan on the same number of issues? Or will you leave it open and see how things go? I'm sure you have it all outlined, but have you decided 4 or 5 or just see where it kind of ends up, how it all paces?
At this point, I write it with 4 issues in mind. But if something crazy comes up and I go, wow, I need to include this in this arc, you know, it might end up becoming more than 4 issues. But so far, we've planned for 4 issues. Again, they're all 26, 28 pages long.
Yeah, think about the artist, Ram. Think about the artist as well.
Well, I mean, you're going to be doing, 12, 20, 16 more issues, Dave? So what's 17, right?
Please.
Has anyone ever given you any feedback about that first arc that surprised you? Anything that they said to you that was pretty insightful or just you never really thought about?
Speaking of that, I was talking to, I don't know if you've heard of Paul Lai's podcast, called Comic Syllabus. I was talking to Paul on his podcast. He started asking me about this concept of looking at a city as an ecosystem rather than like a place that people inhabit and move out of, right? And I had to stop him there and go, I can't answer that because in the most recent script that I've written, there is literally a character there going, so in this ecosystem. So I'm like, I can't discuss this because I'm writing it right now. That was pretty insightful. And I'd like to think that a lot of people who are reading this are seeing like the arguments that I'm presenting that are underlying the story itself. I mean, sure, it's cool. You know, there are robots and bandits and people with like magical technology resurrecting devices. But I mean, we're asking questions about ownership of life. Do you own the things you build, even if they have their own lives? What does that mean about a city? Do we own the city we live in? Does the city have ownership over us?
So that's coming out in May, the next arc. Sticking with comics, what else do you have coming up soon? I know, Ram, you have a couple of things at least. Rune of Thieves is coming back.
So Rune of Thieves, which is the second volume of what I will hope will become the Brigands trilogy, is coming out in May. It comes out at the end of May. And very excited about that. Both Dave and I know the artist on that book. Another friend of mine from India who's very talented, just like Dave, and hopefully, you know, we'll have his work seen on a bigger platform as well. Then there's Graffiti's Wall, which comes out in September, which is a 150-plus page graphic novel about 4 kids growing up in Mumbai with like street culture, rap, drugs, and rock and roll, and all of that. So that one comes out in September. We're hoping to launch at the Thought Bubble Comics Festival here in London. And I'm very excited about that, working on that with Anand Radhakrishnan, super talented artist as well. I've got a third thing, which is scheduled to come out at the end of the year. It's not been announced yet, so I'm not going to talk titles. But think vampirism and colonialism set in late 1700s in pre-colonial India.
I'm there. You got me. Is this the one that you had mentioned that's something new for you?
No.
Oh, it's something else.
Yeah, that's something I've been working on with an artist to create a pitch. And we've just started pitching that so for later this year. But that's a new genre for me. The vampirism and colonialism thing is a new genre if you think of it as alt history meets supernatural. So alt history for me is a new genre. Lots of research involved, which is... interesting. Like I sat down to write a page today and I went, I can't write this unless I read up about this person. And so I ended up like going down a wiki hole. The other thing is in a horror genre, which is new for me. I have very specific tastes in horror. The fact that I'm choosing to do it in comics is more challenging for me because I tend to like certain kinds of horror, and to pull that off in comics is going to be interesting. But the collaborator that I'm working with is so incredible. He kind of helps me pull that off really well.
Yeah, I mean, all the artists so Ram is working with our just so kick-ass.
There's this dude called Dave Pramanik who is amazing.
I'm constantly like looking at this stuff Ram shows me, and I'm like, the one he's working with, Anand Radhakrishnan, on graffiti as well. I've actually known him before I started he started working with Ram, and I had no idea that he would be working with Ram. And when Ram told me that he's gonna work with Ram, I was so excited. I was like, oh, I want to see what he comes up with. He works in a lot of mediums. He works in oils, he works in acrylics, he works in watercolor.
He was a portrait artist, and he had never done comics before.
Yeah, he had never done comics before. So when he told me that he's going to work on a comic, I was like, oh, I got to see this. That was when I was like, yeah, Ram is doing some exciting stuff, working with so many cool artists.
I think it's really cool because I feel like there's a scene happening, you know?
Yeah.
So there's Dave, there's Sumit, there's Anand. There's Rosh, there's all of these guys that I knew from back in India that I'm working with now. Everyone kind of pushes each other. So, I mean, Anand looks at Dave's work in Paradiso and he goes, oh man, your visual language is really starting to show. So I want to do something exciting like that.
When I heard that Anand is going to work, I was very excited because me and Sumit, like before we met Ram, we had already been working in the Indian comic book industry for a while. Like we had been doing stuff around. Then when we heard that Anand is getting on board, we were like super excited because I really wanted to see what he did in comics. So now once Anand got on board, I was like, yeah, now we are becoming a complete group, you know, like we have a whole Indian set going on here.
I mean, Chris, I don't know if you've seen this guy's work. I can totally understand Dave being so effusive. Like I genuinely feel like 5 or 6 years down the line, someone like an Anand is going to be, you know, talked about as like a master of the medium if he continues to work in comics. His work is really, really astounding. And the speed at which he's picking up the storytelling aspect of it is intimidating to watch.
Well, I'm interested in seeing that. I have not seen it.
It's on Graffiti's Wall. If you Google Graffiti's Wall, which is like gravity but spelled with an F, you should be able to see it.
Everyone working with Ram right now is just top tier, is what I feel.
I'm incredibly lucky.
Dev, are you working on anything else? I think you're just focused strictly on Paradiso right now.
Yeah, I've been focusing on Paradiso for a while now. Dividing focus as an artist doesn't really help much unless like you're just doing maybe commissions on the side. A project itself is a very intense thing, especially one like Paradiso. It's like creator-owned, and it's not like I'm a work-for-hire, given pages, and I'm just like, oh, okay, just tell me what to do and I'll do it. No, but like when we work, we like sit down and talk about the story and talk about the pages and discuss them thoroughly. It's very intense. I didn't feel like I wanted to take anything other than Paradiso that would take my attention away from it. Nor did I think I was capable of it. It is intense work.
I also want to point out at this juncture that Dave's work in Arc 2, even though it is Dave and you can tell that it's Dave, it's such a sort of departure from the way things look in Arc 1. That's simply because we're approaching a new aesthetic for. So I've lost count of the number of times we've used the term Tron lines in this.
At one point, Ram had to actually go. Tron lines have been very much the defining aesthetic of Arc 2. Spoiler alert, by the way. And Ram was like, Dave, I know he said Tron lines, but can you do a little less Tron lines? Because that's getting way too much Tron lines. I was like, yeah, I see it too, actually. I'm going to change that. So we pulled the brakes at one point. But the second arc has a very sleek aesthetic to it. Like in the first one, went in line with the kind of stuff I was doing at that time.
But I think it also mirrors the story. Like, you know, the first one feels rusty and gritty and rough.
Yeah, that's why it's so cool. Because when I was doing the first one, my style still was in line with more like, you know, very, like Ram said, rusty and gritty sort of art. It went very well with the kind of story we were telling with the first arc. The second arc, we turned more towards a very sleek aesthetic, very sleek, sort of high contrast and very compact sort of look.
Yeah, lots of clean lines and geometric shapes.
I felt like when I started on the issue, I was having a bit of, I wouldn't say trouble, but more like trying to acclimatize to the style. But by the middle of the first issue, I kind of got into the zone. And I've been riding that zone ever since, to the point where almost I had to be told to reduce the Tron.
Chill out, Dave. Chill out.
Yeah, chill out. No more Tron lines, man. But yeah, I'm really enjoying this compact look on the second arc. I guess everyone will get to see it when the book comes out.
Last time we talked, I asked you some questions outside of comics just about you, and I've expanded that list. So there's questions I haven't asked you yet. Yeah, that's some new ones. Right. If you're interested, want to play? I'll put them out there. Okay. Yeah, okay. So thinking back to when you were an adolescent in your room, what was on your wall in the bedroom? Like, what pictures and posters did you have adorning the walls of your room?
Well, I had this bulletin board. And what I would do as a kid was like, because we didn't get the latest issues of comics. So my collection mostly included like back issues, 3-4 years old by then. Also like comic books I got from friends and relatives. So what I would do was, and please don't judge me for this, but our comics, we got comics from an Indian imprint called Gotham Comics. It was like it published both DC and Marvel stuff, right? And they would have these pages in between, which was like contests. And those contests would have like pictures by like the popular artists, like Ed McGuinness or, you know, those kind of artists, like very popular and very nice looking work. What I would do was I would go in and I would cut those out and I would put them on the bulletin board. I don't know why I did it. I just liked the look of like my bulletin board just covered with like comic book stuff. But yeah, in retrospect, I was like, why did I cut the comic books? What was going through my head? But yeah, I had like this whole wall of artwork by amazing artists, and I would just have it up there. In retrospect, I do feel bad for the comic books, but I felt like that was like something that really put into me that, yeah, I want to be an artist. I want to draw.
I won't judge you for that, for cutting up your comics. I did the same thing when I was a kid.
Well, they kind of encouraged you to do that at one point.
Yeah, they did. The story I always tell is that I still have the copy of Hulk 181 with the first appearance of Wolverine, and I cut the stamp out of it. So I show it to my kids. You see this, kids? Don't let this happen to you.
It would have been valuable one
it
day.
It would have been, yes. <That's> Not now.
Kids, don't cut out anything from your Paradiso comic. It'll probably sell for, I don't know.
Ram, how about you? What was on the wall?
My answer is going to be a bit strange. I had nothing on the wall, but my bedroom wasn't really where I spent most of my time studying and stuff. My dad had built like a little study area for me and my sister. And my sister being like super studious, she would have already finished all her work, and her little corner of the room was super neat. And mine was just a giant mess. And it had everything. It had books. It had like overturned chairs. It had old typewriters and light fixtures that my dad had gotten over from the house that we used to live in before we moved there. And so I got really, really used to working in these kind of super cozy but warrenous and almost like walking into someone's zone and you don't know. Nobody else would know where things were. And if anyone ever straightened up that room, I'd be lost. But I knew exactly where everything was. If you step into my office where I'm sitting right now and you looked at it, you would go, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, Rob. Your office right now looks like it's about to collapse in a giant heap of freeze. I pretty much had like really old books. My dad's library was in the next room. He'd built these shelves on the wall where he had his books. And so at that point, I would try to emulate everything he was doing with his books. So I had like a giant stack of books lying around everywhere. I used to kind of sneak into his library and read books that I wasn't supposed to read at my age, but that doesn't seem to have done any lasting harm. So
yeah, if you think about it, it's almost like we are the perfect images of what we had. I had a very visual thing on my wall. I turned out to be a visual artist. Ram had more like stacks of books. He turned out to be the writer. It's like life taking its own course. You
know? I mean, more than anything else, my dad used to love to collect stuff. He had like a huge collection of books. And he had like maybe 500 or 600 audio cassette tapes. If you look at my major hobbies now, it would be reading, drawing a little bit, and music. So blame my dad. That's what I do.
Now, thinking back, was there a birthday, any birthday, that stands out in your memory? Why does it stand out? Was it a gift, a person, a place you were? Ram.
I remember a birthday where we went to a hill station called Karaikanal in India. At the time, at least, was a very sort of non-touristy, quiet, really lovely place. And I remember it for a very strange reason. Maybe not entirely good, but it's an anecdote that stuck with me forever. So I remember I was out there and my cousin's families had come over as well. So we'd made like a huge, big vacation out of it. And you used to get those cigarettes, but they were actually candy. So you used to get these like mint cigarettes and they were called, I remember this, and it's related to comics because they were called Phantom Cigarettes in India. And they had a picture which was like a cheap knockoff of the Lee Falk Phantom. And so my cousin and I, we were on some sort of green meadow thing there outside the place where we were staying. And we were sort of using this candy and we were pretending to be like grown-ups. We were like, oh yeah, look at me, I'm smoking. My mom sees this and before she can even ask for an explanation, she just comes up and like loses it, right? Absolutely loses it. And for like the next 45 minutes, I am having hell. And then at the end of 45 minutes, I'm allowed to get a word in and I go, it's candy. She's never lived that down. I've always made her feel guilty about it. That's what you did to me on my birthday, Mom. But
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that was great.
I almost thought the story would end. And my cousin was never heard of from again. If that was my mom, I think that would be the case. Yeah, birthday-wise, I don't really remember. But we always would get the cake and eat. I just remember that my mom would give me books on my birthday, which drove me to like read a lot when I was a kid. That's pretty much most of my birthdays. I don't remember birthdays, but I must be looking like a very boring person right now. But I've never been that kind of a person. Like Ram can attest, my birthday was not a few days back, on February 26th. I sometimes forget my birthday. That's the kind of guy
I like how he sneaks that in there. In case any fans want to send any gifts, my birthday is February 26th.
Yeah.
I'll make up for your lack of story, Dave. On my 22nd birthday, I invited a bunch of friends over. I was in the States. I think it was my second year in the States. All I will say, and it's always cooler to say this, is I ended the birthday, passed out in my bathtub, with a sushi chef costume on and a circle of 10 friends sitting around the rim of the bathtub eating ice cream. True story.
What the hell?
Did anybody get a picture of that?
there is actually a picture floating somewhere. I've been trying to track it down for years so I can burn it and make sure there are no copies left, but there is still a picture.
I need to find this. I gotta end the call and find. This is exciting. I need that picture in my life.
Next question. You're both hugely successful, and a toy company wants to make an action figure of each one of you. Now, if they did that, what would be your accessory?
Mine's easy. Trench coat.
Ram can pull off a trench coat. He has a stature for it. I actually drew him. It's a very minor role. It was more like I was drawing the guy and it started to look like Ram, so I just gave him glasses and I was like, yeah, that's Ram.
I'm going to go back and look now.
Yeah,
me too.
It's like the part where Noira is taken into for the interrogation with Hazard.
Yeah, I remember.
So for Christopher, I don't know if you remember, there's this part where Noira gets taken in for interrogation and then they basically destroy a toy soldier. So there's this one guy behind Noira who brings her in. He kind of looks like Ram. So
what's your accessory, Dave? What's your accessory?
You thought we forgot. No, we're waiting.
I like how he's deflecting the whole time.
No. My point was that Ram can pull off a trench coat. And also, when you started the question, I actually thought you were stating of some toy company wants to make figures of one.
Chris, you really sold that successful part. We both kind of believed it for 5 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. The successful part, I was like, I wouldn't say we are wildly successful, but yeah, okay. But then when you said the toy thing, I was like, I should have gotten a memo about call. But anyway, my accessory, right? Two swords on my back. Like, I'm a big Witcher fan. I really like the lore on that. So I would like to have like a full Witcher outfit gear, I guess. Like, that's something I would really like. Really think Witchers are really cool. You guys do know Witchers are, right?
I know.
I really like the concept of like two swords on the back, like one specific purpose. So like, yeah, having those on the back, and it looks cool.
I just like the idea of like a sword for demons and a sword for humans.
Yeah, exactly. I love that. I love the whole lore of the Witcher universe. Yeah. It's so cool.
And final question. What question have you never been asked that you want to be asked? Something that people don't know about you, but you wish they did. Something you want to talk about.
You've totally stumped us here, Chris.
Sometimes it opens a can of worms. I mean, you know, oof. I know, it's a tough one.
The tamest one I can think of is, can you wiggle your ears? Because I can.
That's a gift.
Yeah, I can. They've won round zero. How would that open a can of worms, though? It's like someone gives you a gun and you shoot your own foot with it. It's like, why would you do that? So one question I would want someone to ask me is, I'm really trying to think really hard about a question that I would love to be asked.
Chris, you realize you're asking this question to people who work in comics and are therefore mostly people who spend a lot of time at home.
I know. But I get some fascinating answers sometimes. It's
most of the things I can think about are like video game related, because I really love video games. Yeah, I would love people to ask me like what kind of games you like, or, you know, what kind of games you play. Because I don't get that question often enough, because there are very few people who actually are into video games around me.
I will attest to this. Like, every time I talk to Dave about doing something in the comic, he's like, have you played this? Have you seen the way they've drawn that in that game? I'm going to try and do something like that.
I love video games, and I don't get enough people asking me about what I'm into, because when I get into video games, I get into video games. That's why I have been staying away from video games the past couple of months. Whenever I get to work on some issues, like the one arc, whenever I start an arc, I put everything away. Like, even when I'm working on it, I have like some small games up which I play from time to time. Like, no one really comes up to me and asks me like, oh, you love video games, what kind of video games do you play? And like, it's mostly people are like, oh, I have this much, I can play video games of like this high graphics. Or it's mostly about, look, like, no one is really interested in the meat of games anymore. They don't ask me like, oh, what is this kind of, which kind of game do you play? I'm like, I love to play RTS style strategy games, you know, real-time strategy games. No, there are no people who really love that kind of stuff. So it's really hard to talk about that kind of stuff with people.
You know, people even like that do comic book interviews. I don't talk a lot about gaming because I don't do a lot of gaming, but I know a lot of people do both and they have an interest in both. And I know a lot of creators play games too. So I'm surprised.
I think it's a cultural thing as well, in that games are much more sort of accepted social thing here in the UK or in the US.
Yeah, exactly.
In India, they still, it's still a very sort of underground gamer culture thing. So
Actually, that as a, like, I get asked about comics very few times in my everyday life. Like, people are, I have to explain to everyone what a
comic people just assume, don't they?
Yeah.
I work for comics. Oh, cool. You draw that children's book publication.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, gentlemen, thank you very much. It's been great to catch up with you again. And trade's coming out May 16th. And then you've got second arc coming out starting in July. And we'll look for that in previews. I guess that'll be out the end of April. We should see that solicitation come out. Or, well, was it May?
Yeah, it'll be in the May catalog for a July release. Yeah. I mean, we're already through two issues of the next arc. And so we'll be sharing visuals from the arc soon.
I think Ram has already shared a few sneak peeks. Yeah. One that he has shared that is really telling. It's like a visual of Karen standing in a corridor.
It's full of Tron lines.
Yeah, it's full of Tron lines. But it lights up as she's standing there. That's actually a very nice description, a visual description of what we are going for in the second arc.
Very good. Look forward to that. Again, thank you both for being on Creator Talks.
Thank you. Pleasure. This was a real pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as we did. Coming next week, at last, Mike Baron, the Bloody Red Baron Experience. Mike is the creator of Badger and the co-creator of Nexus with Steve Rude. Please join us next time. Thank you for joining me for Creator Talks this week. The show is available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, YouTube,
and also on Amazon Echo and Dot devices.
Just say, Alexa, play podcast Creator Talks to hear the latest episode. In addition, you can listen to the show and follow it through Podbean. Your feedback is greatly appreciated, so please rate and review on iTunes if you like the show or an episode that you heard. Your ratings and reviews go a long way to helping the show, and I can't thank you enough for taking a bit of time to do that. For your convenience, in the show notes of each podcast, I have a link to my iTunes page where you can rate and review the show and see the entire list of shows available. If you haven't heard them all, take a look through. There are living legends and up-and-coming comic creators. Tell family and friends who like comics and comic book creators about the show. And to subscribe. The content is free. Just as valued are your comments and feedback. You can reach me through Facebook and Twitter at Creator Talks Pod. That's at Creator Talks Pod. You can also reach out to me by email. You can find that at my website, creatortalks.com. At the website, you will also find blog posts, reviews of books that I have read that you might want to read too, my catalog of podcasts, and videos and other written articles on the website, creatortalks.com. A hearty thank you to all my guests. It is an honor and a privilege for you to make time to be on the show and talk to me about your work. It is your knowledge and insight into the creative process that makes the show so unique. My thanks also goes out to my family who makes this show possible, especially my executive co-producer, Mrs. Calloway. I'll be back each and every Thursday with a new interview. For Creator Talks, I'm your host, Christopher Calloway. Until next time.